Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Empowerment Radio for you. I hope everyone is having a wonderful day today. I am Stacey Giovanni. I'm the host of Lifetime Success for You. I'm the owner of Lifetime Success for You and the host of Empowerment Radio for You. I am the For You Girl. Today I have with you on my show Marjorie McKinnon, and she's the founder of the Lamplighter Movement and the author of Repair Your Life, a program for recovery from incest and childhood sexual abuse, Repair for Kids, Repair for Toddlers, and Repair for Your Life workbook, Repair for Teens, and It's Your Choice Decision That Will Change Your Life. I'm very pleased to have her on my show. This is going to be a very educational and inspiring show, and I'd like to introduce for you now. May I call you Marjorie?
You can call me Marjorie.
Okay. All right, Margie. Let's go with Margie. How are you today?
I'm fine, Stacey. How are you?
I'm great. I'm in sunny, kind of cold Florida, but you know what? When you think about the weather elsewhere, it's okay.
That's true.
You know, Marjorie, I kind of like to talk a little bit about your foundation. I read a little bit about the history of your foundation. How did the Lamplighter Movement get started, and how many chapters are there currently?
Right now we have 79 chapters in 10 countries. We have 56 chapters in 28 states, one in Washington, D.C. That currently changes from time to time.
Okay, all right. So you're international, you're nationwide as well?
Nationwide, yes, and in 10 countries. Working on more.
Oh,
we've got three chapters in women's prisons, and we have four children's chapters, I believe. So my goal was to try to get one in every women's prison, but that's a huge goal. So I'm working on it.
It is.
And all of our chapters in women's prisons are using the Repair Your Life program as a model for recovery, and the chapters, children's chapters, are using Repair for Kids as their model for recovery. Doing very well, too. I'm really proud of
them. Let's talk a little bit about that. I'd like to talk a little bit about that program that you have. Can you give us some insight on that?
You're talking about Repair?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Repair is an acronym that stands for the stages of the program: recognition, entry, process, awareness, insight, and rhythm. And as you begin the program, it's very important, the R, which is recognition, very important that you identify what happened to you, that you acknowledge what happened to you, that you see it for what it was. I mean, I've heard people say, yeah, well, it only happened to me once, so that doesn't matter. Or somebody will say, well, yeah, but I was 14, so I should have known better. Or it was a date rape, so it doesn't count. There are so many people that make excuses to themselves because they don't want to face the recovery process and repairing the damage that was done. Actually, when I was in recovery and I was trying to do this program as I was going along, using everything that I had learned put into the program, I kept trying to figure out what's a good name for this program. And then one day it dawned on me, repair, which means to fix something that is broken. And that's what happens in our life when we've been sexually abused. We're badly broken and we really need to be repaired. And the E is for entry, where you make a decision. Let me see, do I want to go to a therapist? Do I want to join a 12-step program? Do I just want to work this program? There's so many options available to you and the groups that are available. And I explain how to protect yourself as you go into these. Like, a lot of people don't understand, if you have a therapist, that doesn't mean she's going to make you well, but it will go a long way towards helping you. If you asked her, has she ever been involved in a in treating child sexual abuse, or is she herself a victim? A lot of information. I mean, you can interview your therapist like you would anybody looking for a job or something, because getting the right therapist is important if you decide to get a therapist. I explained about 12-step programs, and what a wonderful, what a wonderful thing to belong to. I worked Codependence No More along with Repair while I was in my recovery, and I just think everybody should work a 12-step program. Process is where we get to the nuts and bolts. There's all sorts of different techniques that I learned while I was in recovery. A lot of them I just accidentally stumbled upon, like the magic mirror and creating a family history and just a host of different things that help you little by little by little to get towards the truth. And as you're working your way through those, you'll find yourself coming at the end of that to awareness, which is where you have this, oh, my God, it wasn't me. I didn't cause this. You are so totally aware of what really happened and who the perpetrator is, and it's not you. And then insight, which is where you kind of put all this together, sort of like pieces in a puzzle, and you see the complete picture. And then the last one is rhythm, where you go back to that which you were before you were sexually abused. I mean, we all have an original identity, and when you're sexually abused, it rips that stuff all out of you. I mean, somebody who might normally be a joyful, optimistic kind of person becomes sad and desolate and full of despair and hides all of that. So that's what the program is all about, and it really works, because when I started my recovery program using this repair program as I went along, which I, created out of my own, what I learned, self-awareness, but I was living with my third abuser. I was so badly sexually and emotionally and physically battered. I was suicidal. I lived part-time in a woman's shelter. And at the end of my recovery, I literally was the happiest person I know. So this program works. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that it's important to explore all your options out here when you're going through these things. I'm a survivor of abuse as well, so I'm very aware of losing your identity and just basically not knowing who you are. Walking around, I walked around in the cloud for so many years, just thinking that it was all me, all me, all me. And unfortunately, that's the situation that a lot of survivors of abuse go through. They don't know who to trust, number one, because trust is a real block a lot of times in going to get help. And I'm a firm believer that, you really need to go to somebody that's lived it, that's done it. The same way I specialize in addictions and abuse in my practice. And I think it's important to understand what's really going on with somebody. Not to negate people that are out here helping people that have not lived it, but I think the education and life experience is so valuable in working with somebody. I think as survivors, we have an empathy that is profound when we've lived this.
Oh, and we so much understand it. I mean, when I first started recovery, I went to so many groups that were just really harmful to me. I didn't know where the right place was. I kept thinking, I just need someplace, please help me find a place that will, get me started. And I kind of wandered into an Alternatives to Domestic Violence program out in L.A. And first time I sat down there with my box of tissue, which I carried everywhere, I listened to this room full of women tell me their stories. And when it got to me, I said, "You're all married to my husband." I mean, that's how much I could identify with them, and I can't tell you the strengthening and empowering just finding that out did for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's important to acknowledge the cycle. When you've been abused as a child, we tend to carry that in our life. If we have not addressed it, we carry it in our life, and it impacts our decision-making. It impacts everything about our life. Until it's addressed, until it's dealt with.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
What started your journey on building your foundation? You said you went through some things of your own, and that was what started you in terms of really going through. How did you decipher which was the best way to do it, and how have you grown this chapter to be so phenomenal? That's just wonderful. I so applaud you for that.
Well, I mean, it started out when I was in recovery, and I kept wishing I had a lamplighter, somebody to show me the way. And towards the end of my recovery, part of what I did was I went to my father's grave, and I sat for 4 hours, and I cried and cried and cried, and I screamed at him, and I was so, I can't tell you how angry I was. And then at the end, I told him, if you can help me get my words out to help other people, if you can help me to start a movement for others who have been sexually abused, then I can forgive you. And when my husband and I wound up living in Arizona, he decided to build a website for me. I still had been thinking about this, although it had been a while since I'd confronted my father at his grave. And so he put up a website, and the first people to contact me was a little town in northern Minnesota called International Falls. They said they wanted to start a chapter. Well, I was just so amazed. Well, this is wonderful. And they wanted me to come back there and do some speaking engagement. So my husband and I flew back, drove up to International Falls, spoke at a college, spoke at their little group that they were starting, their little Lamplighter Movement chapter. And then I told them, I said, you know, guess where I was born? I said, where? And I said, I was born in this little town, International Falls. My father delivered me in the middle of a snowstorm. And they were just stunned. And I was too. I mean, I took that as a sign. The first place that wanted me to start a chapter happened to be my birth place. And it was just a little town. It wasn't very big at all. So I felt that my father was trying to help me. And from there, I just kept building and building through the website. People would contact me. You know, we get 5 chapters, 7 chapters, 8 chapters. And I looked upon it as a group sort of like when I walked into that alternative domestic violence, a place where women or people could come and tell their story so that other people could identify with them and other people could open up. And that's kind of what happened little by little over the years. Gosh, we have 2 chapters in Pakistan. We have, I think, 13 in Africa. Different countries. We have 4 in England. We have, I think, 2 in Canada. So little by little, it's growing. And I think it's really helping people. A lot of them are using Repair Program as a model for recovery. Some are not. And I think it's a big help, and I'm looking forward to it growing even more.
Yeah, I was reading this information about you and doing my research, and you weren't just a victim of your father's. You were a victim of your mother's as well.
Oh, that's so true. And that's something I didn't face in the beginning. And right at the end of my recovery, I found this therapist who said that he could cure anybody in 8 sessions. And I thought this was such an outrageous claim that I really had to meet this arrogant guy. So I went down there and I said, you can get me, help me get rid of my ex-husband. I mean, my abusive husband, in 8 sessions, right? And he said, yeah. So we kept talking and talking, and I kept going back, and nothing happened. And then finally, toward the end, he said, I was busy chattering away, and he said, what happened to you when you were 3 years old? I said, nothing. He said, okay. So I kept on talking, and then I thought, I just told a lie. I can't stand a lie. So I said, okay, wait a minute. I got to back up for a minute. I mean, something did happen when I was 3, but it really was nothing. I mean, it really is nothing. You're going to laugh at me when I mention it. And he said, yeah, go ahead and mention it. I said, well, my father was in the Marine Corps, away from home, and my mother had 4 small children, and she used to line us up every morning on the bed for daily enemas. We lay like sacks of potatoes on the bed while she shoved her instrument painfully up us, and we would sob, and it was, while I was telling him what had happened, I just started crying. And I was crying so hard I couldn't stop. And then when I walked out of there after that session, I felt like 100 pounds had been lifted off my back. Because he told me, he said, that's child sexual abuse. That was a woman who was sexually repressed by a husband who was missing and took it out on her 4 kids. It was severe abuse. Nobody had ever told me that before. I'd never told anybody about it, but I just thought it was something that mothers did. But I've since found out that that definitely was childhood sexual abuse. So I had to work that into my recovery as well. I had a harder time forgiving my mother than I did my father. I guess because my father and I were so close until he started the abuse. Mm-hmm. So that's what that was.
What advice would you give someone who is a victim of sexual abuse as a child?
And is aware of it? And well,
what advice would you give them? Yeah, if
I think that they need to, first of all, acknowledge that this did happen, and then they need to make a firm decision to recover from it, that they're willing and able to do the work that's needed to get healthy. And then they should, I mean, I recommend getting the repair book and starting to work the program as it's outlined in there, and get to a 12-step program, Codependence Anonymous. You wind up thinking, this is just a yucky 12-step program, I don't want to go there. But give it 6 meetings, something kind of magical happens by then, and you look around and you realize, oh, my gosh, I'm in the right place. So taking action, working towards something that's going to get you on that path of recovery is very important. It's important to tell your story. If you don't tell your story, you can't move forward. So find a friend. Send an email to me. I can't tell you how many people have emailed me their stories. Some of them 8 and 9 pages long. I print them out, sit and read them all. A lot of people still keep abreast of what's going on with them, but you've got to talk. You've got to open up. The silence is what's making this such a worldwide epidemic. You still get people that say, what are you talking about it for? I have my own family members. Some of them are ashamed of me. Why can't I keep my mouth shut? Why do I have to talk about that yucky sex stuff? I mean, I have a granddaughter who treated me like I was invisible for years because she was so upset at what I was doing. It's really hard for people to acknowledge that getting help for something like this, it means you're not responsible. If you were a victim, the same as if somebody just put a gun to your head and took your money. I mean, somebody did put a gun to your head. When I was halfway through recovery, I found out that my ex-husband had sexually molested my 2 older daughters while we were married. I had no idea. I mean, that was so hard for me to overcome and keep going because the guilt and the shame that I wasn't there for them. And then my youngest daughter had been raped at gunpoint when she was 17 while she was working at a fast food store. And that just proves that children of an untreated incest victim or a child sexual abuse victim stand a 5 times greater chance of being molested themselves. So that's another reason why you need to get into some kind of recovery program if you know at all that you were abused. And don't say, well, it only happened once. And don't say, well, he didn't actually insert his penis, so it really wasn't sexual abuse. That's just hogwash. I mean, find out exactly what sexual abuse is. I mean, there's a lot of information available out there so that you can identify what happened to you. I don't care. You know, I actually had a lady tell me one time when you were 13 years old, so that doesn't matter. I mean, you know, if you were younger, that would have mattered. Had somebody else say, well, it only happened once. What are you complaining about? You know, that's a person that I know must have been sexually abused. I mean, sometimes you can listen to other people and what they say, and you can know that they have some kind of a problem with this. So get help now. Get help soon. It's never too late, but the earliest that you start, the earlier you start, the better your chances are making healthy choices in your life and not passing this on to your children. That's so vital. So,
yeah, you know, and that's what I talk about as well. It does impact your children. It does. And I think that it's really important. I've gone out and tried to do speaking engagements, and I'm on the Speakers Bureau for RAIN and talked to women's groups. And I can't begin to tell you how many people have said, oh, well, we'd like to have you come in and talk, but not about that because that's a dark subject. We want to deal with that. Hello, it happens every day. It happens every day. And just because you want to put blinders on and pretend that it doesn't happen, oh, well, never happened to me because I live in an affluent neighborhood, there is no discrimination on abuse. I mean, it affects everybody. Abuse does not have any blinders in terms of race or education or geography or financial status. It does not have any blinders on that. So, you know, for the people out here that are listening to this conversation, you know, be aware that, you know, it happens to everyone. Everyone can be a victim of domestic violence and sexual assault. And putting the blinders on and pretending that it does not happen, that's just ludicrous to me. I mean, what if something happens to somebody in your family and you put the blinders on and you have no clue how to help that person? The dialogue that you can have with that person may either allow them to have the strength to go get help or shut them down and never talk to anybody about it.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, it impacts our health so much. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard of the ACE study, ACE, Adverse Childhood Environment Study. It was done by Dr. Vincent Folletti from Kaiser Permanente San Diego. He was the director of forget what you call his department. But anyway, he worked with the Emory University and the Centers for Disease Control, and they sent surveys out to, I think it was about 15,000 Kaiser Permanente patients, and had them do a survey on what kind of their childhood was like, if they had any abuse, to list that, and then to list any adult health onset disorder, health disorders, you know, diabetes or health trouble or obesity, and it was amazing result. Showed such a huge percentage of people who had been abused as children, especially sexually abused, that would wind up with so many health problems at a younger age than they should have normally had them, if any at all. And, you know, if you go to the acestudy.org, you can see that study and what they did and what the results were, and become more aware that this is impacting your health, if not now, down the road. And it doesn't happen just once to people. That's what people think. You know, once you advertise and you have no boundaries, no sexual boundaries, that you have such poor self-esteem, you know, this has been done to you before, you have a sign on you walking around that says this, and it makes you vulnerable to other perpetrators. So it happens again and again. So you got to get help to stop that in particular, not only your children, but yourself too, so that it will never happen again to you.
Well, I agree. I agree on that factor as well. You know, because the stressors that go on in our lives that deal with when we're not dealing with these issues, they do impact the body. It's a mind-body connection. And if you have those stressors, it stays within the body and it festers like a cancer and it can cause issues physically. And people don't understand that, and they feel like if I don't address it, it didn't happen. I did that for years. I was abducted when I was 16 and driven 250 miles away from home and sexually assaulted. And I tried to go get help the first time, and I went to a mental health specialist, a free one, because I was 16. I was a runaway. And she didn't even acknowledge me. I mean, she didn't even look up at me. She was making notes and handed me some antidepressants and told me to leave. I was 60 years old. At that point, I figured I was going to bury it. If I didn't think about it, it didn't happen. But the body reacts to that, and I ended up having panic attacks. I had panic attacks for years, not even understanding where it all stemmed from. You know, and it doesn't dissipate. It doesn't go away. And people really need to understand that it just doesn't dissipate and disappear and go away. There's still a part of it in you that has got to be addressed.
It's like a wound. I mean, I liken it to a wound in my repair program. It's like a wound. If you don't get that wound treated, it's going to get infected. And the infection will spread throughout your whole body and impact your general health. You've got to get the wound treated. You've got to get ointment on the wound. You've got to get a bandage on it. You've got to fix that wound. So one day it'll be nothing but just a small scar. And that's what happens when you repair the damages from childhood sexual abuse. You've got a wound and you have to address fixing it and repairing it. If you don't, it's going to cause damage for the rest of your life. Even, you know, and the sad thing, Stacey, is that so many people, they wind up, as, and I did this too, you probably did the same thing. As your life goes on, you think you don't deserve anything. So that's why you choose perpetrators as husbands, you know. That's why you wind up having unhealthy friends. That's why you make unhealthy choices in your life with your work, with where you vacation, with your social life. You know, you get addicted to sex, to drugs, to booze, to people. People addiction is horrible. And, I mean, this is just, if you could see a picture of a wound with the damage spreading all over the place, just like it would in your body, then you would really want to get that wound taken care of now, if you could visualize it that way.
I agree. I was brought up in an abusive alcoholic home, and I left home. I've been out of my own since I was 15. And it impacted me to a point where I was, you know, I felt like I walked around with a sign on my back constantly. I'm vulnerable. I'm a victim. You know, it was just incredible how I just attracted the wrong kinds of people in my life. And, you know, I was an addictions counselor for about 20 years. And I brought in my women's abuse group into this program and did my own survey. And of the women that came in there, 95% of these women, Marjorie, had some kind of abuse issues. And, you know, the women in my women's abuse group, you know, I'd say about 73% of them had never even discussed this with anybody and were using basically the drugs to mask the pain. They were using it as an anesthesia from the pain because they never dealt with it. And, you know, you get to the point where you're dealing with this in the way that you think is going to help you, but it doesn't help you. And it just spirals down in your life. And it's just a sad situation. And you really get to the point where it becomes a comfort zone because your self-esteem is so low that you feel like those are the only people that you can be around because everyone else is going to judge you if you open up your mouth and say what's really going on, what's really happening. And I agree, you know, you it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
Yeah. And that medication, I mean, same thing happened to me. I can't count how many therapists I went to, but they'd all give me antidepressants. And antidepressants kept me alive for many years. I mean, the first one I put on it was after a suicide attempt in my early 20s. I actually had two of them. Both times wound up in a psychiatric ward for 2 weeks, just numb with what's happening to me. And that's how they got me to keep functioning, with antidepressants, and for years and years and years, until finally when I was in my mid-40s and I was married to my third abuser, I went to my family doctor and I said, I need stronger antidepressants and I need sleeping pills that are stronger because I'm having a really tough time. And my family doctor, God bless Dr. Hall, he said, you know what, I have been asking you for years if your father ever sexually abused you, and I'm tired of hearing you tell me no. You are going to a therapist who's a survivor herself, and you are going to get into a program. So I dutifully went, thinking, oh, yeah, the therapist's going to give me some kind of pills, and all right, I'll go, Dr. Hall. So I went, but the woman I went to, Marcy Stewart, was a wonderful, wonderful woman. She was a child sexual abuse specialist in the Orange County area in L.A., and she got me started. I mean, and I didn't have to take any more pills. By the time I finished recovery, I never took them again. So that's not a good way to go. You're right. It just masks it. You think you're fixed. You're not fixed. You're just now addicted to the pills. So, you know, it's like you got to do it right. If you don't do it right, you're wrong.
You're not dealing with a core issue, and that's important. You have to deal with a core issue. What do you think is the link between domestic violence and sexual abuse?
Well, for one thing, your self-esteem is really low. I married the first guy that said, I love you. I mean, I couldn't believe anybody loved me. Somebody loves me. I think I'm a piece of crap. So your self-esteem is so low. You know, you wind up with bad guys because perpetrators do not hit on somebody who is healthy. A healthy person knows to say, bug off. But if you're a child sexual abuse survivor, victim at that point, you'll wind up pulling in, you know, it's like bullies need victims, survivors need perpetrators, you know, and you just tell yourself it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And then you keep moving your boundaries. You know, you don't have much boundaries the way it is, but you keep changing them. Okay, I never called my husband an alcoholic. I used to say he drank a lot. I was too ashamed to say he was an alcoholic. Even though he was gone to the bars every night, he'd be gone on weekends, come home stumbling drunk. Oh, dear, I guess he has a drinking. You just don't have the ability to realize what's going on in your life, so you keep pulling in more and more bad guys. And you let them get away with what they're doing because you don't have the self-esteem that's strong enough to say, I need it. I mean, you just keep letting them back in. So I'm sure that the biggest percentage of domestic violence survivors were child sexual abuse victims or were battered or abused in their childhood in some way.
I agree with that. I agree with that. You know, and I like to interact a little dialogue in this as well. For the ladies that are listening to us and for the gentlemen that are listening to us that are survivors, and there are men out here that are survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence and child abuse. You know, don't negate the importance of the emotional abuse because that can be the starting part of the abuse coming on. That's the prelude to the abuse. So don't negate that, and don't negate how it impacts you and your life choices and how it's impacted your self-esteem and your sense of empowerment, because that's so important, you know, and I think that's not really addressed enough because there are so many people out here that say, well, he just yelled at me and called me names and, you know, and it kind of made me feel bad, but I think everything is okay. No, it's not. Abuse is abuse is abuse. Or, well, he just shoved me. You know, people really don't put credence in the fact that they are being abused, like you said earlier. And emotional abuse is rampant out here as well. And it impacts us. It impacts us on an emotional level. It impacts us in our subconscious, and it makes us to where we make unhealthy choices. And it you know, we have to address that as well.
I know. You know, when I was growing up in our family, if you thought you did something good or you started feeling good about yourself or being capable, well, you got punished. I mean, my mother did not believe in anybody having strong self-esteem. I would get punished if I said, oh, Mom, look what I did. I got straight A's. I'm so proud of myself. Young lady, go to your room until you learn how to be humble. I mean, it just was, but I mean, that in itself helped set me up, because if you don't think you're anything but a piece of crap, you're not going to do anything but make unhealthy choices for yourself because you think that's all you deserve. So, yeah, emotional abuse can, you're right, it's sometimes the starting of it, and because you put up with it, it keeps going, like in a marriage, and it keeps going. Next thing they knew, they bring out the bigger guns, and, you know, you move your boundaries, and you put up with that, until it just gets worse and worse and worse. Then you have to reach your bottom, like
yes.
The 12 step is say, you reach your bottom before you'll get into recovery.
Well, you know, and I think that's really important to accept all of that as well. And, you know, in my case, you know, I wanted love so desperately because I didn't get love at home. And I wanted love so desperately that I just kind of accepted any guy that came around. And with me, it was if there was sex involved, I attributed that to love because I needed that physical. It wasn't about the sex; it was the physical touch, the feeling. And you know, guys are real good at saying, "Well, I love you." That's you know, so easy for them to say that. And, you know, I became a caretaker. Because I felt like if I got involved in an abusive relationship, if I just stayed in there and hung in there and loved them enough, they change. And that, I think that's a trap that a lot of us fall into in getting involved in an abusive relationship. If we just cared enough, if we just showed them enough love and really stuck by them, they'll change. And that is not the case.
Yeah, that's true. And another thing that I've found happens, or at least it happened to me, and I'm sure it happens to a lot of child sexual abuse victims, you think that that's the only value you have is your sexual ability. And so as you get to be an adult, you wind up pulling in people who validate your sexual abilities as the only ability that you have that means anything. And so that's why, you know, nobody gets to see whether you're smart or caring or any other qualities you have, because these perpetrators are trying to find people who they can sexually abuse. And if you think that's the best thing you got to offer, guess what? Pretty sad.
That's so true. And that's how we lose our identities.
That's true. Yeah, we don't even know who we are because nobody ever gave us a chance. And, you know, it's really hard to be a good parent. There aren't that many of them out there. A lot of people just have babies for the wrong reasons. And nobody trains you on how to be a good parent. I mean, I don't know if schools have brought in any training on that. Maybe not. And so we're still, you know, not learning anything about it. You know, when I wrote Repair for Teens, I went to my local high school here and talked to the counselors there, told them this is the book I'd come out with now, and I really wanted to start lamplighter meetings at the school. And they said, we really need it. This is a high school. And they said, we really, really need meetings like that. So let us talk to our board and we'll let you know. Well, a few weeks later, they contacted me and said, I'm really sorry, but the board says we can't have anything like that at our school. Oh, that is too bad. I could have really helped a lot of people. I mean, I left some copies of the books there and my business card there so people could notify me. But, you know, people don't want to come out of hiding. I mean, I live in a small town, and I know that sexual abuse in this town is rampant because it's a Verde Valley that has an awful lot, in Arizona, has an awful lot of meth labs here. That brings in domestic violence, brings in child abuse, child sexual abuse, but they have to come out of hiding, and they're not going to, especially a teenager. You think a teenager is going to go to their mom or to their minister? I mean, who do you go to if your parents are the abusers? Now, where do you go?
Right.
I mean, maybe go to the counselor and the counselor can help you some, but they're not going to try to get a meeting set up, a lamplighter meeting, if the board tells them, no, you can't do that. I mean, that's just hogwash. My favorite word today.
I like it too. All right, Marjorie, you know, we're going to end up our conversation here. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to give your contact information, if you'd be so kind to do so.
Okay. Please email me at margie@thelamplighters.org. And the name of the website is www.thelamplighters.org. There's just a wealth of information on that website. And if you would like to start a chapter, contact me. Or if you want to know if a chapter is in your area, look at the chapter locations. And then you can contact me for information from the facilitator of that chapter on where the meetings are and when they're held and so on. But it's margie@thelamplighters.org. And I'd be happy to accept anybody's story. If you feel like you want to write your story down to get started, please do so.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Margie, for being on our show. This was really a great show. It's just wonderful to have you on. And you keep up the good work. We need all our voices out here that we can get.
Oh, I know. Well, thank you so much for asking me. I appreciate getting the word out.
Yeah, you take care and keep up the good work. Thanks so much.
Okay. Okay, you too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Marjorie McKinnon from The Lamplighter. I can't even begin to tell you how many times that we talk to people that are survivors, and there's so many people out here that are doing good work, and bless your hearts. I'm Stacey Giovanni. You've been listening to Empowerment Radio for You. I'm the owner of Lifetime Success for You. That is the number 4 and the letter U. I am also a survivor of child abuse, sexual assault, and domestic violence. I do speaking and advocation for that, for those all those issues. I am a consulting hypnotist and a neurolinguistic program coach. I specialize in abuse and addiction issues. So if you'd like to contact me, you can contact me at Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at Lifetime Success, all one word, the number 4, the letter U.com, or call me at 813-808-2886. Again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day, and stay tuned next week. Next Thursday, I'll have someone else on. I have people that are the top of their ladder for what they do, and always here to inspire, educate, and make things available to you for education purposes. You have a wonderful day. Till next week, bye-bye.